Welcome to room 4216. I'm so glad you've come.
Hi, Pastor Dave. How are you?
Hi, Cecilia. Well, I'm okay, although it's been a weird day. I've been cold all day. I had to go
cold?
Put on a sweatshirt and some extra socks. Yeah, I'm just cold.
But it's not even cold outside.
I know. That's what's so weird about it.
Okay. And other than being cold, how are you doing?
I don't want to complain, but my legs are just aching today.
Why is that?
Well, it's going to rain later today.
and you're the local weather forecaster now.
Yeah. My doctor said I can't do Advil, and that would have taken this little ache away in my leg, but in both legs, actually. But I had an ulcer last year, and so the doctor said, don't do Advil. So I got to live with the weather forecast.
Well, that, and you got to live with getting old, too.
Hey, watch it there. Respect your elders.
I'll respect them, but I'm going to make fun of them, too.
Well, I think we probably should just jump right into reading. We got a lot to do today, so Cecilia, would you start reading?
Sure. These are the names of the sons of Israel who went to Egypt with Jacob, each with his family.
Whoa, hold it. Last session, we were in Luke. Where are you reading now?
I'm reading in the book of Exodus. I decided we should have a change. Uh-huh.
Okay.
We need a break.
Why do we need a change? Why do we need a break?
Well, for one thing, I think it's good for us to have a change every now and again, just to keep things exciting, keep things interesting, not just for the listeners, but for us too.
Yeah.
And Exodus is a really interesting book. You know, we studied the book of Genesis a while back.
That's true, we did.
And that was interesting.
It was. It really was. As we showed how God made everything good, man messed it up, and then God made it good again.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose Exodus does pick up on that, but we're going to have to do a lot of work on the who and what and where and why and how and all that before we can just start this.
And do you think that I would have come into this without doing a bit of homework?
Okay. Tell me what you got.
So, who? The author of Exodus is Moses. We have that from the Old Testament itself, and we have it from the New Testament. Go ahead.
In fact, Moses wrote the first five books of the Old Testament. They call it the Pentateuch, the five books.
Or the Torah.
Or the Torah. Mm-hmm.
And when? The Exodus took place around the year 1446 BC. People say that it took place later in the 1200s, but there's not a lot of evidence to support that. So,
as I recall, there are those two narratives. All of these are based on both the chronologies of people, but then also the extra biblical material, noting when wars took place, when cities were there, and so forth. And as you said, I do remember the more traditional one being the older one around the year 1500. You said 1446. Okay.
Why was it written? It was written to...
I can answer that.
Go ahead.
I do like Exodus. It is a good book, and I'm glad you chose that. It's switching out of something. It really demonstrates how God wants to redeem his people. We think of the book of Exodus as just God bringing people out of slavery into a promised land, but it's more than that. That's the small story. The bigger story really is he did that. He redeemed them, but it points to how he's going to redeem all of us, bringing us out of our slavery of sin, bringing us to the promised land not of the United States or whatever country we're in, but of heaven. And he does that through Jesus, even as we'll see Jesus and many pictures of him popping up all over the place in the book of Exodus. So redemption, redemption.
Mm-hmm. So, where? Well, goes from Egypt to the promised land, or begins to tell that story.
In fact, some might wonder, Egypt? I thought this took place in Israel or the old time Canaan. Well, you may remember, if you didn't join us with the book of Genesis, they had, well, first, which son was that was sold into slavery?
Joseph.
He was sold into slavery. But God worked that for good because there was a famine, and Jacob sent several other of his sons down there to get food. And Joseph recognized them. They reunited. Joseph forgave them. They were embraced. And because of the famine, Joseph welcomed them to just come on down here to Egypt. I'll take care of you. And so the whole kit and caboodle, probably 100 people in the clan, moved down to Egypt.
And they lived there for
hundreds of years.
30 years.
Yeah. And that's where this story then picks up. And so let's begin the book of Exodus right at the beginning, chapter 1, and we're going to read verses 1 through 14.
These are the names of the sons of Israel who went to Egypt with Jacob, each with his family: Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah; Issachar, Zebulun, and Benjamin; Dan and Naphtali; Gad and Asher. The descendants of Jacob numbered 70 in all. Joseph was already in Egypt. Now Joseph and all his brothers and all that generation died. But the Israelites were fruitful and multiplied greatly and became exceedingly numerous, so that the land was filled with them. Then a new king who did not know about Joseph came to power in Egypt. "Look," he said to his people, "the Israelites have become much too numerous for us. Come, we must deal with them shrewdly, or they will become even more numerous, and if war breaks out, we'll join our enemies, fight against us, and leave the country." So they put slave masters over them to oppress them with forced labor. And they built Pithom and Ramses as store cities for the Pharaoh. But the more they were oppressed, the more they multiplied and spread. So the Egyptians came to dread the Israelites and worked them ruthlessly. They made their lives bitter with hard labor in brick and mortar and with all kinds of work in the fields. In all their hard labor, the Egyptians used them ruthlessly. And of course, what do I have to begin with but questions?
Questions, of course. Go ahead.
It didn't mention Joseph in any of these names.
You're right. It didn't, but it did in verse 1. It says that the sons of Jacob who came down to Egypt were. So Joseph was already there, and that's why he's not mentioned. He was already there.
Ah, okay. That's what happens when you don't read.
Sometimes it's simple.
Okay, my second question. I read about the Revolutionary War and the colonies when the people came from England to America, and that was around 400 years ago, give or take. And so I know my history pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what was going on with the king of Egypt who didn't know about Joseph? I mean, Joseph did all this great thing with helping to keep the famine from killing Egypt. So what was going on there?
And I was wondering where you were going with this reference of 400 years. Well, a couple things. First, kings weren't about giving history lessons to their people. Back in those days, oral transmission was used, and usually the king would control the stories that he wanted to send out. And the stories he wanted to send out were about him and that he is the mighty king. And so many times kings didn't mention the previous king or two in the past. Second, there were several generations that went by. So it wasn't just like the next king. The next king did know of Joseph and what he did for his father, the king. But the grandson or the great-grandson wouldn't have. And remember, Joseph wasn't a pharaoh. He wasn't a king. He was just a good manager of the crops. So he was a good...
Governor or manager?
Yeah, governor, manager, head of state. For example, can you tell me who the head of state was in Jimmy Carter's cabinet, who was the Secretary of State?
No.
Can you tell me who the Secretary of Defense was in President Nixon's cabinet?
Definitely not.
See, you remember the head one, but not always those underneath him.
Oh, makes perfect sense. All right, then. It said that the Israelites multiplied. They started out with 70 and they multiplied into the hundreds.
Yeah, God blessed them and their children and their offspring. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So why? And Joseph and the Pharaoh had given them this whole land of Goshen to live in. Why didn't they fight back? They were enslaved. So why didn't they say, we're not going to put up with this?
Well, okay, two things. Since you were a student of the Revolutionary War, the first time people said, no, we're not going to pay these taxes to the King of England, did the king just capitulate, roll over, and did they win the independence?
No, of course not.
How long did it take?
Years.
Years and years and years. And many thought it wouldn't even happen. So there may have been some resistance, but more than likely, the people of Israel back then were a peaceful type of people. They were predominantly shepherds, sheep herders. Mm-hmm. They took care of the sheep. That's why they liked Goshen. It was such a fruitful land for grazing. And so they weren't warriors. And so if soldiers came in, they could clamp down. And the first response to anytime you see a soldier is to, you know, just comply. And if the king were smart and savvy, and he probably was, he would know how to manage and manipulate. You don't become the king of Egypt by just rolling over.
No.
He would have known how to manipulate things and situations so that he could be in complete control. And before they knew it, they were moved from being shepherds into making bricks. And that was a miserable way. And have you ever made a brick, by the way? Have you ever done it all day long, by the way?
No, I have not.
They're exhausted. And so they didn't have any energy to fight back. Let's go on and read verses 15 to the end of the chapter, which is verse 22.
The king of Egypt said to the Hebrew midwives,
whose names were Shifra and Puah. When you help the Hebrew women in childbirth and observe them on the delivery stool, if it is a boy, kill him. But if it is a girl, let her live. The midwives, however, feared God and did not do what the king of Egypt had told them to do. They let the boys live. Then the king of Egypt summoned the midwives and asked them, "Why have you done this? Why have you let the boys live?" The midwives answered Pharaoh, "Hebrew women are not like Egyptian women. They are vigorous and give birth before the midwives can arrive." So, God was kind to the midwives, and the people increased and became even more numerous. And because the midwives feared God, he gave them families of their own. Then Pharaoh gave this order to all his people: "Every boy that is born, you must throw into the Nile, but let every girl live." So here we are, and the Hebrew women are losing their babies, or they would be.
Old too.
Why, though, did the Pharaoh say, "Let the girls live, kill the boys"?
Two reasons. One, if boys live, they become soldiers. Two, if boys live, they will want families, and so help bring more people into the world. So killing just the boys took care of two things. More production, it would slow it down because the Israelites were growing in number. They're multiplying fast. Kill the boys, that won't happen. And then second, there won't be soldiers.
And could it be also that the girls then, they could force to take Egyptian husbands and...
Very good point. Thank you. I had forgotten that point. What the Pharaoh was really trying to do was move the people out of Goshen and have them join into just a general population of Egyptians. Yes. Yes. And so they would mingle and just become part of the general population rather than being this separate group, which they loved being because they were the people of God. And that's what Pharaoh didn't like. He was God, and they were to worship him, and worship him is what they should do. And so he was trying to move them over to their religion. And so, yes, you are absolutely right, Cecilia. The women would have joined with the general population.
I find it interesting that you don't get a lot of... you get women in the Bible, but there are many that are not mentioned. But these two midwives, Shifra and Puah, they are specially mentioned because they feared God, they honored God, and so they were given special honors. I get the idea that they didn't have kids before, but because they did fear God, God heard the desire of their heart and gave them families.
Yes, and it should be noted clearly here, when they feared God, God said, "Don't take life." And so here they were protecting life. And they even lied in order to cover up what they were doing and letting the boys live rather than killing them. Yeah. God values life, all life. And if abortions would have been around back then, the Pharaoh probably would have said, "Abort the babies." But that wasn't there, so he said, "Kill the babies." But these two ladies said, "We value life because we value God."
So then the Pharaoh decided to take steps a bit further, and it wasn't just the midwives that he said, if you know, to kill the baby boys, mm-hmm. but it was anyone who saw a Hebrew baby boy.
Throw him into the Nile. Mm. Throw him into the Nile, which would have meant there would have been instant food for the crocodiles. And now we move on to Exodus chapter 2, verses 1 through 10.
Now, a man of the house of Levi married a Levite woman, and she became pregnant and gave birth to a son. When she saw that he was a fine child, she hid him for 3 months. But when she could hide him no longer, she got a papyrus basket for him and coated it with tar and pitch. Then she placed the child in it and put it among the reeds along the bank of the Nile. His sister stood at a distance to see what would happen to him. Then Pharaoh's daughter went down to the Nile to bathe, and her attendants were walking along the river bank. She saw the basket among the reeds and sent her slave girl to get it. She opened it and saw the baby. He was crying, and she felt sorry for him. "This is one of the Hebrew babies," she said. Then his sister asked Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and get one of the Hebrew women to nurse the baby for you?" "Yes, go," she answered, and the girl went and got the baby's mother. Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Take this baby and nurse him for me, and I will pay you." So the woman took the baby and nursed him. When the child grew older, she took him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. She named him Moses, saying, "I drew him out of the water."
And here begins the life of one of the most interesting people in the Bible.
It's true. He is one of the most interesting people, but I'm sorry, we cannot begin discussing Moses because we are out of time.
Oh.
But if you and all the listeners will come back at the next lesson, we shall pick up Moses and many other special things from this book. So I was surprised to be starting here, as you remember. But I'm glad we are. It's a cool story, and how it points to, again, not just the redeeming God's people out of slavery, but our redemption out of sin. Because Moses really ends up to be what is called a type. And we'll talk more about that next time, how about. But until then, if you have any questions, write us.
You can do so at info.
I-N-F-O.
At not-alone.
N-O-T-A-L-O-N-E.
.net.
N-E-T. And remember,
we are not alone.
Do come back again to room 4216.
Credits. Our sincere thanks go to Terry Nord and Robert Vaughn for their interlude music.